Welcome to another edition of Lying on the Beach. I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And today our guest is Ephraim Olivares. He was born and raised in Mexico City, is bilingual, bicultural. His mom is a Jewish lady from New York, his dad a Mexican dad, and he graduated with honors from Wharton School and secured an MBA from the University of Southern California and spent over 20 years as a leader in pharma, helping launch Viagra across Latin America and working with other drugs, including Zoloft and Lyrica as well, as one of his other drugs he's worked with. But let's put all that aside, because an Ephraim decided to reinvent himself. He went back to school as a full-time student at Christie's. Believe it or not, they're also a school besides an auction house. They offer a master's program in modern and contemporary art. Ephraim was the oldest to graduate in his class. He got straight A's, I should point out. And in 2016, Ephraim formed Look at New York Art, an art tour service focused on taking both art lovers and beginning artists and people who want to first learn about art to some of the best spots and galleries New York has to offer. His greatest pleasure is to learn about and research artists and to make art come alive for groups and individuals. And Ephraim, welcome to Lying on the Beach. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, well, and I have to ask the one question, like, of all the things to do a life change from the world of pharma to art, I mean, were you always a huge art lover? Why this transition later in life?
You know, I was always a kid that loved the arts, and thanks to my parents, I was exposed a great deal to them. I played the piano. When I got to UPenn, I loved art history classes, but my parents really believed in getting kind of a more financially lucrative or secure career. So the arts kind of were left a little bit to the side for a while there.
And the idea of once getting your art degree to start doing these tours, why do that with this degree? What instead of being a curator at a gallery or a museum, why this direction dealing with the public?
You know, interestingly, the degree that I got at Christie's Education, they had been very clear that some of the roles that wouldn't necessarily be available to me are curator roles, because the curator track usually involves people that went through undergraduate art history and then are basically PhD candidates that are deeply, deeply involved in a very specific art area. So this degree was a little bit more of a generalist art degree. You learn a little bit, you know, less depth, but broader scope. And so what it does give you availability to do is, for instance, work at the auction house, work at galleries, and so on. I did intern at the Christie's auction house in the photographs department, and that was very enjoyable. I did also spend over a year at a Chelsea-based gallery, but I think what I was finding is that what I love to do is do the actual research, learning about the art, and then sharing that with people. So that's kind of what took me to the idea of, you know, I want to be directly involved with the art and give tours and talk to people.
Ephraim, are there many other people that do this?
The answer is yes. I know that you haven't always seen them or heard about them too much. The reality is that there are. Some are PhDs. I've learned to believe that just because you have a PhD isn't going to make you the most engaging speaker. There are people out there that promote the fact that they do art tours and that they're a collector. Some people say, I give art tours and I'm a painter. So there's a little bit of this that goes on there with people positioning themselves a little bit differently.
Fabulous.
I've been on kind of an abridged tour. Ephraim's taken me to a couple of galleries, and he does have a lot of insight. So where do you get all this information where you're not only looking at the art, discussing the art, but then you know more about the background of the artist, especially some modern, you know, some contemporary artists who, you know, their story's still being written. How do you get the background stories you get?
It's a great question. I have to admit, I do a lot of preparation for my art tours. it's not as if I take people somewhere and I just wing it and kind of right off the bat come up with whatever I want. I really go to all of the places I'm going to tour in advance. I look at sometimes lectures, videos of the artist speaking about their art. I look at existing videos. I look at the literature. So I really try to prepare. So what's funny is that there's so much art in certain areas of New York, you know, within blocks, you can go to literally dozens and dozens of galleries. I think what I take pride in doing is looking around, seeing what I think is some of the best, and then preparing very heavily for the art tour so that I really know in advance where are we going, who are the artists, what kinds of shows do they have, and then what are some of the most salient works.
So, Efren, do you do galleries, museums? Explain to the people that are going to be listening to this podcast, you know, what these tours are about. So people say, hey, I want to go to this guy's website and sign up and take, you know, his service.
You know, the two areas of New York that I find lend themselves beautifully to great art tours, walking tours, are Chelsea and the Upper East Side. And I'm going to tell you why. Those are areas that have, again, dozens, if not hundreds, of galleries within walking distance. And frankly, they're galleries that are already showing artists that are either relatively well-known or quite established. And to be honest with you, I believe that if people are paying for an art tour and they're coming all the way to New York City, you really want to show them some of the better art that's out there that's more established. The Lower East Side, as some of you may know, has also become a really thriving gallery area.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of galleries now in the Lower East Side that are showing more emerging artists. I find that there's less written about those artists, less literature, and less for me to rely on. So that's why I err a little bit on the galleries in the Upper East Side and in Chelsea. And I guess what I offer is, you know, the reality is that these galleries are open to the public. They're free. Anyone can go in there. But if people are like I am, there is something slightly lonely about walking into a gallery all by yourself. The staff sometimes doesn't even say hello. And I think they don't want to bother you. They want to just let you go in and look. And I find that it can be kind of a lonely experience to look at art completely by yourself. You might pick out that sheet that they offer with the background and the press release. But other than that, you know, you have no one to talk to about the art, ask questions, kind of engage. So what I like to offer is the opportunity to really look together, to engage, to discuss, to ask questions. It just makes it much more fun.
That is absolutely incredible. I lived on the Upper East Side for most of my life. And I would go past galleries and I would never think of going in because all I would think about was, oh, this must be millions of dollars. You know, they don't want me in there. I'm wasting their time. I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't want to be asked questions. So I would think that if people knew what you were doing, you know, they would absolutely say, you know what? I want to spend the afternoon doing this and let's discuss what we're going to see and what I'm going to learn and, you know, and come away with, you know, a great, you know, invigorating few hours.
Do the gallery
That's
owners,
exactly, yeah.
Do they mind you coming in? Do the gallery owners, are they happy to see you or they're like cranky to see you or what's the
you
feedback
know what?
From them?
For the most part, they really enjoy it. They don't mind it. Obviously, I make sure the group is respectful in terms of volume and kind of staying together and looking and, you know, being appropriate and not coming in with food and things like that. A couple of galleries prefer, if you're bringing a group, that you make an appointment ahead of time. And there are also some that, they just rather your group isn't very big. That just kind of makes common sense. But in general, they enjoy it. They like it. What I find is that in about a two-hour tour, we can usually get to about six, maybe seven galleries. And again, I pre-plan ahead of time where they are so that kind of the path to them makes sense. You know, we're not going around in circles, or we're not going to the first one 5 blocks away and then the last one back there. It's kind of a little bit of mapping out the tour and making it effective. The other thing I like to do, frankly, is it's really fun to mix it up so that the tour makes sure we see some great sculpture, some great painting, maybe multimedia videos. Try to look at all the mediums, I should say, and also make sure that we're seeing both international and U.S. artists, some women, some men. It's also fun to mix it up in terms of artists that are no longer with us and very established in the art canon, like a Picasso or Degas, but then also looking at, you know, living artists that are working now and showing us exactly what they did this year.
Efren, how many people are usually a good group?
I tend to find that the best groups are only about maybe 6 or 8 people.
That's what I thought.
I just think it makes it a little more intimate and a little bit easier to handle. So this is not about, you know, 20 people and me, you know, holding the umbrella up and kind of like having a huge group take over a gallery.
Efren, I'm going to ask a question. That's kind of a trick question. And I just thought of it now because I was in a deep discussion with an artist friend yesterday. How long do you think the traditional art gallery is going to exist in this world of the digital age?
You know, one of the biggest things they taught us at Christie's Education, and I'm really a believer in it, is the whole idea of seeing art in person. One of the things that the digital world can't replace is what you actually see and feel standing in front of a painting or moving around a sculpture. So even, you know, art professors recognize the limitation of sitting in a dark lecture room looking at slides, because at the end of the day, you're looking at a slide. You're
right.
Not actually in front of that Jackson Pollock with its magnitude and scale and kind of looking at from every which angle that you can. So I think that the role of museums and galleries and places where you see art in person live is always going to be very important. And that's what I like about these tours. You know, we are going in and seeing the actual works. This is not about slide lectures.
Right.
And I can add to that in that when I took art history 1,000 years ago, it was all done on slides. It was exactly sat, you know, they just took pictures of it. And I actually wrote down some of my favorites. And years of a year or two later, I was actually in Europe. I created sort of a list of things I wanted to see. And I'll never remember the shock of like the size of pictures. Like, you know, in when you're looking at them on slides, they're all the same size. But when you actually meet them in real life, some are small. Grass on Medusa was huge, and I was like blown away by how big this thing was, which I had never. It never got into my brain when I saw it at the slide that it was a monster painting. So I think seeing it in person can give you a completely different perspective than you get if you watch it on your phone, your computer screen, or on a slideshow.
Efren, do you do museum tours as well?
I do museum tours. And regarding that, what I do is I go to museums that are okay with some of us kind of outside tour guides going in. The reason I mentioned that is there are museums in New York that are very strict about only their official docents being the ones that do touring. So I definitely go to the Met. I go to the Met Breuer, which was formerly the Whitney. I can go to the Jewish Museum or the New Museum. There are others like the Whitney or MoMA that unfortunately really rely on their own personnel.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I could probably take you to MoMA if you're just one person or two, because frankly, it looks like I'm just with friends and I'm,
right.
You know, we're having
right.
an intimate discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't want me to go in there with a large group acting like I'm officially a tour guide at MoMA.
How do you get most of your referrals?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been kind of muddling my way through the whole world of social media and the internet. I have to do much more of that. Word of mouth is good. You know what? You never know. Last year, my own financial advisor said, God, it would be great if you do a tour for some of my clients. You know, they're the people I look at their investments and their savings. It would be nice for me to do something special for them. And so I wound up taking 10 people on a tour through my financial advisor. So you never know where groups might come about.
That's true.
And people are using it as a business perk, like a gift, like a gift it as a Christmas gift to clients and stuff, you were telling me, correct?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a really big opportunity. I think, you know, people are always wondering, what should I give my mom for her birthday or my wife for anniversary or my friend? And I think it does lend itself to being something that's a really unique, different kind of gift, right? It's not, you know, from J. Crew or the Amazon catalog. It's something very different.
Efren, who are your favorite things. Artists?
Oh my goodness.
Or you know, the ones that are most exciting today.
You know, it's funny. I'm a really big fan of some of the artists of early modernism. So, you know, the very beginning of the 20th century gets me very excited. But you know, let's talk about like this fall season, right in Chelsea, they're about to open shows, a Paul Klee show. David Swerner Gallery has just recently become the gallery that's going to represent the Klee family's collection. And that's going to be an interesting show because it focuses on his very last year as an artist, 1939. But then also in Chelsea blocks away, there's going to be an Alexander Calder, which is focusing on his very early career up to the time when he created his famous mobile. So it's fun that in a matter of blocks, you can see very late works from Paul Klee and then very early works of Alexander Calder. So that's why you can have fun with this. You can tailor a tour that's going to look at kind of like early days of one artist, late days of another, and talk about that.
Do you get into their personalities at all? So people could like love something about an artist and buy the painting just because of something in their background and not necessarily the piece of art, or is it just the technique of the art?
I find that people love some of the anecdotes, biographical details of artists. So aside from, you know, looking at the art and what's in front of us and talking about that, people do love a little bit of tidbits and gossip and the backstory sometimes of either the works or of what was going on with the artist's life. Now, interestingly, in my master's program, they warned us that historically it's been thought that there's too much reliance on artist biography to explain their work. So that sometimes, you know, years ago, it used to be like, oh, well, this must be dark because, you know, the person was depressed in that moment. And I think in more recent times, that's been looked down upon. It's like, let's look at the art and what it is and not start overly thinking that it's linked to the person's biographical details.
That's interesting.
But that goes even for the issue that existed with women artists, where people would be like, oh, look, Georgia O'Keeffe is making flowers because she's a woman. That's very much looked down upon now. They actually call it kind of essentialism. It's like, oh, women must do art this way because it's feminine and they're women. It's like, no, it's not about biography. It's not really about gender and sex either.
But you do know that most artists, I mean, their present being influences what they're doing.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. I think the issue is with going overboard and trying to explain the art almost fully in terms of, you know, the person's situation or their mood or It must play in some way.
Yeah, because people love to hear little anecdotes about the artist, and it just makes them feel more connected to the art. You know, if they don't
absolutely.
Know anything, and it's a big and it's a canvas filled with, you know, paint or crayons or whatever the media is that's being used. I mean, it just is kind of like you love it because it brings energy to you. But it's even better, in my opinion, if you know something about the person that, you know, that did it.
It helps you connect to the piece of art. So it's not just the picture, but it's also you feel like you have some connection to that art, to that artist.
I mean, I have a piece of art that somebody told me that whoever the artist was, he was psychotic. And whoa, I love the painting even more. Ooh, I picked somebody that's psychotic. I must know something. You know, I connect to somebody that's avant-garde, a little crazy, you know, not bland and, you know, predictable. I was thrilled to death. So I would think that people would love you telling them little tidbits about the artist.
And that's right. And, you know, the other thing that I think people really benefit from and enjoy is understanding movements a bit and what was happening in the art world at the time. Kind of looking at why, you know, pop art and people think, well, gee, there's these, you know, soup cans and, you know, Roy Lichtenstein basically painting comic book type paintings. Well, people understand it better when you link it as a kind of a reaction against abstract expressionism. So that's what was happening there. It's like, okay, art doesn't have to be big, huge, expressionistic abstract paintings like a Pollock. We can just take something really simple, commercially available, like a soup can, and now it's about that. There's very little expression. There's very little drama there. It's something really, really concrete, commercially available. So having people think about why that arrived as a reaction to what came before it makes it very interesting.
I once saw an exhibit at the MoMA where they showed what influenced the painter, like it showed specific pieces of art and how famous, you know, could, you know, a big name artist basically had imitated something he or she, mostly he, had seen at a gallery show during their lifetime, and then it almost looked like, you know, how they ripped them off. But it was fascinating to see the not famous piece of art next to the famous piece of art and how they were influenced by it. It was pretty amazing.
And that's such a great point, because so much art is basically borrowing from previous art. The word that's used often now is that, you know, this artist has an affinity for so-and-so, or there's an affinity between these works. Picasso was a great example. He started looking at basically primitive masks. There was a museum in Paris that had opened, and it was showing basically masks from Africa and the Iberic Peninsula. And so in some of his work, you start seeing this primitivism, and he was actually looking at very ancient masks from very exotic lands. And then suddenly there it appears in his works.
Exactly.
Wow.
I think that was one of the examples they gave. And they actually showed like the proof of how he had gone to that exhibit. So we know he'd seen it. And then look at this work of art that came out, you know, 18 months later. Very, you know, there you could see the direct line. You could draw a line between the two pieces of art. So that is pretty amazing. So I think finding the context of a painting or a sculpture or whatnot is so fascinating. It makes it even more fascinating than it would be without knowing that.
So Ephraim, I would like you to tell our listeners, because I think this is a very opportune time with this podcast. There are so many of my friends that are so much more educated than I am, that are so much have so much more money, they're so much more social, and yet they have never really entered the world of art. They kind of like go in and out or not at all. again, my husband and I, we don't have a lot of money. We have some, but not a lot. We are not really educated in the world of art, but we made it part of our lifestyle because we used to work for someone and we worked together in the same place. That's how we met. And he was an art collector and he was very avant-garde in his art collecting, all emerging artists, you know, well-established ones too, but really wacko stuff. And we had it around the office all the time. So we were just like thrown into it. And that's where, you know, we evolved from. But I'm trying to tell people, and I would like you to expand upon this, that if they went with you on the tours and they became familiar with the galleries and they met the gallery owners and then they started to see some of the same people that came into the galleries, whether they're collectors or just fans, and then they would see them at little parties that they may get invited to if they get friendly with you or the, you know, the collectors or the gallery owners, that if there's a whole world where you don't have to have a lot of money that gives you a slice of life, a cultural, you know, entry, even on the littlest bit that is just wonderful under all circumstances. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I think if I'm understanding correctly, you know, it's fascinating. There are people that are in the art world. It seems like they've been in it for a long time. They travel around to go to the art fairs. They collect. They're incredibly engaged. And then there's people that are the complete opposite. You know, they rarely go to a gallery or a museum. And then there's some people in between. I really do believe that going out and looking at art, it's for everyone, even for those that are not very engaged. Once you do it, I think you start getting into it. I do think there's a bit of a process. I mean, there could be people that are just completely uninterested, but I do believe that by going out there and starting to look at it and learn about it, it does, the interest does grow, if you know what I mean. I think part of it is really about exposure. I find that one of the challenges about modern and contemporary art, I find this all the time, is one of the terms that's used about art over time was the de-skilling of art. You know, there are a lot of people that are still stuck with the idea that the reason real art is the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel is because it takes incredible draftsmanship and skill. It's not just something that looks like a square with some dots on it. And I think especially with modern and contemporary art, people need to get over that hurdle that this is also art. It's about ideas. It's about the first times certain ways of painting or sculpture were being done. It doesn't look intrinsically as skilled. It looks maybe almost, again, it's the old, my kid could have done that. But I think with time and getting into it, people start understanding why those works are also very valuable and very worthwhile.
That's
I don't know
beautiful.
If I answered your question.
No, that's beautiful. No.
No, I think that definitely captures it. And what do you think, Lois? Are we set?
I think this is a beautiful experience. And Steve, right in front of Efren, I'm going to thank you for this. And what took you so long?
I don't know. I should have introduced you guys a long time ago. But on that note, and also Efren's what makes New York a great city, because you couldn't have an Efren without great galleries, and without great galleries, I mean, the two go hand in hand. I hope our listeners will engage Efren, go onto his website, which let's do it right now. I know we'll put it on the copy as well, but it's look at New York Art, correct? Is that your website?
That's right. It's look at, it can even be A-T, because that'll find it as well, NYART.com.
Okay, so I hope people will engage Efren and hire him for their tours, because honestly, it's money well spent and a fabulous afternoon, and you'll really take away way more than you will if you just go for a cannoli someplace. So with that, but not, of course, you can do both. You can do the tour and, of course, do a cannoli as well.
Anyway, once again, thank you very much, Ephraim. I'm
thank
Steve
you.
Greenberg. Oh, my, our pleasure. I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And we have been Lying on the Beach. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.